Okay. The Kaivalya Upanishad, I decided to start this. I did order some texts. There's not enough texts, so I'll order another batch for next week for those of you who didn't get a text, okay? Kaivalya Upanishad is the 11th Upanishad that's often taught. Shankara, the major Upanishads are the Upanishads that Shankara has written a commentary on. He didn't write a commentary on the Kaivalya, so it's considered one of the minor Upanishads, but it's a minor Upanishad that is frequently taught. And in fact, when I was doing the teaching with Swamiji, I was at the course in 1980 in Piercy, California. We had a three-year course. Swamiji asked me to teach this text. I haven't taught it since then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I haven't taught it since then. So Swamiji teaches it on occasion, but because there's all of the texts that have the Shankara Bhasha, usually we're doing those. We don't have time for this one. But it's a beautiful Upanishad, and it's often an Upanishad that is memorized and just chanted by sannyasis. By the sannyasis, well, often, yeah. It's a text that's always kind of resolving into the self or into the whole. It's a beautiful text, isn't it? So it's only 22 verses. It's part of the Atharva Veda. And the Atharva Veda, each of the Vedas will have several Upanishads attached to it. I don't remember which ones are attached to each one, but for the Atharva Veda, there's the Mandukya, which is a major Upanishad, the Mundaka, which we've already seen, and the Prashna, which I haven't taught, we haven't taught yet, and the Kaivalya. And so all of these particular Upanishads will use the Shanti Padram Karne Vishunyama Devaha. So here on this handout, there are certain swaras for this particular Shanti Pat. You normally were doing Sahanabhavatu, but for different Upanishads, they'll have different Shanti Patas that are associated with the Upanishad. So with this one, did you get one of these? So with this one, we'll learn the Shanti Pata, and this is the one we'll be chanting in the class. Some of us already know it, but our Saturday students used to chant this all the time. Anybody have one?
It's not in the text, is it?
It is, but it doesn't have it in the handout, in the text that I've passed out. It is there, but it doesn't have the swaras.
So
25, I need one just so that I don't make a mistake on the swirls. Okay, so. So this is only the Upanishad's only, I think, 24, 23, 24 verses. So I'll start by, but we'll start with by learning the Shantipata, and I'll unfold it. And for those of you there's all the transliteration below, so if you don't know the Sanskrit script, you can use the transliteration. Do you notice the horizontal lines? There's some horizontal lines below some of the letters. Everybody notice that? And then on top, there's some vertical lines. See those? Mm-hmm. Those are tones. The horizontal line is the low tone. If there's nothing, that's a middle tone. And if there's a vertical line, that's a high tone. And so when you hear me chanting, you'll see that we're going down, up, down, middle, up, like this. Just follow this one for a minute. Om Padram, see that? Om Padram Karne, see that? Karne, because of the vertical. Om Padram Karne Vishvanuyama Devaha. And so we're going to just learn how to chant this, and then I'm going to teach you the meaning, okay? So just do the best you can with repeating. Om Padrasram. Om Padrasram. Karnebish. Shrinuyama Devaha.
Shrinuyama Devaha.
Om Badrang Karnebish.
Om Padrasram Karnebish.
Shrinuyama Devaha.
Shrinuyama Devaha.
Padram Pashe Makshabhir.
Padram Pashe Makshabhir.
Yajatraha.
Yajatraha.
Padram Pashe Makshabhir. Yajatraha.
Padram Pashe Makshabhir. Yajatraha.
Stirai Rangai.
Stirai Rangai.
See, there's two verticals? That's Stirai Rangaihi. So it's two tone, okay? Okay. Stirai Rangaihi.
Stirai Rangaihi.
Stishtuvagum.
Stishtuvagum.
Sastanubihi.
Sastanubihi.
Vyashema.
Vyashema.
Devahitam.
Devahitam.
Yadayuhu.
Yadayuhu.
Vyashema devahitam yadayuhu.
Vyashema devahitam yadayuhu.
Swastina Indro.
Swastina Indro.
Vriddhashravaha.
Vriddhashravaha.
Swastina Indro. Vriddhashravaha.
Swastina Indro. Vriddhashravaha.
Swastina Pusha.
Swastina Pusha.
Vishwavedaha.
Vishwavedaha.
Swastina Pusha. Vishwavedaha.
Swastina Pusha. Vishwavedaha.
Swastina Starksho.
Swastina Starksho.
Arishtanemihi.
Arishtanemihi.
Swastina Starksho. Arishtanemihi.
Swastina Starksho. Arishtanemihi.
Swastino.
Swastino.
Brihaspatir Tathatu.
Brihaspatir Tathatu.
Swastino. Swastino Brihaspatir Tathatu.
Swastino Brihaspatir Tathatu.
Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
Now we'll chant one line and I'll translate it. Repeat after me. Om Padrang Karne Bishrunuyama Devaha.
Om Padrang Karne Bishrunuyama Devaha.
Om, we'll explain Om later. Om is everything, the whole. Okay. Padram means that which is auspicious. That which is auspicious. Karne bihi, by ears, by our ears. Karna is ears. But that which is auspicious, karne bihi, by our ears. Shrinuyama, may we hear devaha. O gods, invoking all of the devatas, O gods, devaha, O ones who are luminous, but it means the deities, all of the devas, may we hear that which is auspicious with our ears. So here, in the context, the Upanishad is being taught. And so what the Upanishad has to say is punya, it's auspicious. There's something very sacred that's going to be unfolded. So may we hear that, means may we have the shraddha. May we have that attitude that allows this teaching to come in so that we can see exactly what is being said. And what is being said is padram, absolutely auspicious. So may our mind be available to our ears so that we can actually hear this teaching. So if we were to do an unfoldment, that's how the unfoldment goes. But just literally, he devaha vokarev. Shrinuyama, may we hear, imperative, right? May we hear, karnebihi, with our ears, badram, that which is badram, auspicious. Okay? So, then, Padram Pashe Makshabhirya Jatraha.
Padram Pashe Makshabhirya Jatraha.
Padram is auspicious. Pashema, may we see that which is with our eyes. May we see Pashema. Padram, that which is auspicious. Akshabihi, with our eyes. Okay. With our eyes, may we see that which is auspicious. Yajatraha. Yajatraha is another name for the devatas. The ones who are being praised, the ones who are being worshipped in the different rituals are the yajatras. So again, it's the devatas are being evoked. So may we see, but may we see with our eyes, that eyes can include, in fact, all of the sense organs, but just may we see with our eyes that which is Bhadram. And so then in the commentary, so may we see this creation as Ishwara. May we recognize this creation that we experience as being Bhagavan, as being the Lord. So that's what makes the creation auspicious, is that we recognize this creation as Ishwara. So with our eyes, but literally, O devatas, O the deities, those who are being worshipped and praised through the rituals, and those who we are praising right now, please bless us. May we see with our eyes everything auspicious. Then, Stirairangai is tushtuvagum sastanubihi.
Stirairangai is tushtuvagum sastanubihi.
Need both lines here. Yashema devahitam yadayuhu.
Yashema devahitam yadayuhu.
Stirahi is the instrumental plural. It means strong, firm. Angaihi, with limbs. Angas, our limbs, our hands and legs, are the limbs of our body. With strong, healthy limbs. Sushtuvagum. Sushtuvagum tanubihi. With the body. Stirahi, tanu, with our bodies and with our limbs. Tanu is body. Tanu is body. So with our bodies and with our limbs, stushtivagum, stushtivan, praising, means praising the devatas, as we'll see. Vyashema, may we enjoy ayuhu, a life, ayuhu, a long life. Ayus means a long life. May we enjoy, may we gain a long life, which is devahitam, which is helpful to you, helpful to the devatas, helpful to you, helpful to the Bhagavan. Following Dharma. But literally, may we live a long life with praising you, with health, a long life with healthy limbs, a healthy body, praising you, you know, while doing that which is hitam. Hitam means that which is beneficial to the gods. It means following Dharma. Okay. Swastina Indra Vrittashravaha.
Swastina Indra Vrittashravaha.
At the very end, you see before the Om Shanti Shanti, there's a Dadhatu. That means may they give, you could say. May hear Indra. That Dadhatu is going to go after everyone. Swasti means that which is auspicious, that which is for our welfare, is swasti. Na is naha. It means us. Indraha is one of the devatas who is really responsible for strength and is really the lord of one's arms, but the one who is responsible for strength. And so may the devata Indra give swasti. Give welfare, give what is auspicious to us. Bless us is a way, that's how we would really say, may Indra bless us. Okay? Give swasti to us. Then, swastina pusha vishvavedaha.
Swastina pusha vishvavedaha.
May pusha. Pushan is a name for Surya, the sun. And the sun is a devata that represents, representative of Ishwara, of the whole, because the sun illumines everything. And so when we say Vishwavedaha, the one who is all-knower, the knower of everything. Because Vishwa means all. You say the knower of all of the Vedas, but you can also say the one who illumines the entire creation. So that's why Pusha. the devata of the sun, will represent Ishwara. So may Ishwara, the one who illumines everything, who is all knowledge, may Ishwara give us swasti. The auspicious word is bless us. Then, swasti nastarksho arishtane mihi.
Swasti nastarksho arishtane mihi.
May Tariksha is a name for Garuda. Garuda is a huge bird that flies through the sky and is responsible for helping Rama rescue Sita. Garuda plays a part in that. But Garuda is the one who travels through the sky without any type of obstacle. Nobody can become an obstruction to Garuda. So it says, may Garuda, who is Arishtanemi, he cannot be obstructed in flight. It's never obstructed in flight. May Garuda bless us. In the commentary, may Garuda bless us by letting all of the words that are coming from the teacher, may they fly into us without any obstruction. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. May there be no obstruction to the unfoldment of these words that are going, of the Upanishads that are going to be blessing us with knowledge. So in that way, may Garuda bless us. Then,
Swasti no brahaspatir tathatu. Swasti no brahaspatir tathatu.
May Brahaspati. Brahaspati is the teacher of all of the devatas. So he's the grand one, the grand teachers. So may Brahaspati give swasti to us. Make all of the words, make all of this, bring all of this, and give us clarity, help us to become clear in all of this that's unfolded to us. Then,
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
The three Shantis. The first Shanti is for the to give us Shanti peace in reference to all of the natural calamities that might strike us. The adidaivika, like the things that can happen, like hurricanes and earthquakes and thunderstorms and natural things from Ishwara that can impede our gaining this knowledge. That's adidaivika. Adibhautika, the second shanti, or may Bhagavan protect us, give us shanti from all of the beings, other than us, human beings and different creatures that can, like snake bites, mosquitoes, problems with all beings, including human beings. Please. Give us shanti. Give us shanti. That humans are all living creatures, may not obstruct our gaining this knowledge. And adhyatmika. Adhyatmika means that ourselves, may we not give ourselves problem for a fever or sickness, illness, emotional problems, whatever could happen from the standpoint of ourselves. May we also be protected. May we also have shanti from our own upadi, from our own body, mind, sense organs. So shanti from our body, mind, sense organs, shanti from all living creatures, shanti from the natural disasters, from the things that can be brought about by Ishwara, by the creation itself. So those are the three shantis. Okay, so the shanti patas, every Upanishad will have a shanti pata that's associated with it. They all are evoking Bhagavan and all of the devatas to protect us while we're gaining this knowledge, so that nothing comes between the knowledge and my ability to see, to understand. So we always will do. So this Shantipata, if you don't think you can remember to bring this every time, you can just leave the stack here and take it, or I'll have some extras bring it up. Eventually you'll memorize this. It's something that we'll be chanting at the beginning of every class. So let's chant it and then we'll begin the function. Can you repeat after me? I'll do it one by one.
Om Padran Karane Vishvinuyama Devaha. Om Padran Karane Vishvinuyama Devaha.
Padram Pashe Makshabhir Yajatraha.
Padram Pashe Makshabhir Yajatraha.
Shirai Rangai Istushtuvagun Sastanubihi.
Shirai Rangai Istushtuvagun Sastanubihi.
Yashema Devahitam Yadayuhu.
Yashema Devahitam Yadayuhu.
Swastina Indro Vriddashravaha.
Swastina Indro Vriddashravaha.
Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha.
Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha.
Swastina Sparksho Arishtanemihi.
Swastina Sparksho Arishtanemihi.
Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu.
Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu.
Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
Okay, so let's start the Upanishad. If you have the text, get to verse 1 and repeat after me. If you don't have the text, maybe you can share with somebody. It won't be on that handout. That handout is only for the swaras that we're going to be needing. If you're in that book, whoever gets to the right page, tell the page number.
32.
32? Okay. So, repeat after me. This first one doesn't have a raga to it. Atta. Atta. Ashwalayano.
Ashwalayano.
Bhagavantam.
Bhagavantam.
Parameshtinam.
Parameshtinam.
Parisametye.
Parisametye.
If I have to break the Sunday. Parisametya.
Parisametya.
Uvacha.
Uvacha.
For Sanskrit students. Atta. Ashwalayanaha. Bhagavantam Parameshtinam Parisametya Uvacha. So now, Atta. Atta means thereafter. The very first in the Brahma Sutras, the very first sutra, Atato Brahma Jignasa, then thereafter one desires to know Brahman. So here is Atta, bringing this Atta here is important. Just let me translate the verse and then we'll see this. Atta, then, thereafter, then, Ashwalayanaha. Ashwalayanaha was a great sage. He was a teacher, an acharya of the Rig Veda, of the Karmakanda, the first portion of the Veda. The first part, the Vedas have two portions. One's the Karmakanda, which really deals with dharma and with rituals and how to behave within the creation, how to be within the creation, what are my duties, what is my dharma within the creation, what are the rituals, what is expected of me within the creation. That's the first part of the Vedas. It's called the Karmakanda. And so the Karmakanda gives you, kind of like a, Swamiji's often called it, it's like a guidebook to how to be in the creation in order to have the most relative shanti possible. What is dharma? What is the natural order of Ishwara? How to be within this creation as a samsari, as a jiva. How to live in this creation in such a way that I can have the maximum amount of shanti, even though relative. So that's the Karmakanda. So Ashwalayana was a teacher of this Karmakanda, of the Rig Veda. And a master of that. So, now, the second part, all of the Vedas have both the Karmakanda and, the Uttarakanda, the Jnanakanda. The Jnanakanda, the second part, is the Advaita Vedanta. It's the Upanishads make up the Karmakanda. At some point, a person may become interested in the Jnanakanda, in the Upanishads. Karmakanda is for those seekers, those people who want to live a dharmic life, have the most amount of shanti possible, and then to receive, to gain the phalas, to gain the fruits of their action, to gain heaven worlds, and to gain, wealth and security, the major arthas, dharma artha, you know, the artha, security, to gain pleasure, to gain dharma, to gain better next lives, all of these type of things. But the first part, portion of the Vedas deals with this, karmakanda. The uttarakanda, the latter part of the Vedas, comprised of the Upanishads, is meant for a different type of adhikari, a different type of student, a person who has a different set of interests. The interest for the person who seeks the knowledge of the Upanishads is this: it's the mumukshu, the one who has recognized that what the karmakanda has to offer can give me relative shanti, but the shanti, the peace that it gives, is time-bound. It can't solve the problem. It can't solve the problem of giving me a fullness that is a well-being that is not subject to change. It can't do that. And so, at some point in time, a person is going to recognize the limitations of the karmakanda in terms of solving the fundamental problem of wanting to be a full, complete being who is not subject to birth or death. A person who wants to know what is the absolute reality of the creation. That's meant for the uttarakanda. So when a person discovers or comes upon that, the limitations of the karmakanda, or for us, just the limitations of life itself. Like say, as you're living your life, you will go on thinking, well, this would make me happy, but it does for a moment, and then that passes. But then you think, well, yeah, but if I would have had this, then that would work. I would become a whole, complete being. And so then you get that also, and then, no, that only lasts for a few minutes of real shanti. And so then you go on like that, collecting all of these experiences, thinking that at some point I will have accrued enough or done enough in order to be able to say, ah, now I've made it. But at some point in your searching for fullness through acquiring things in the world or getting rid of things in the world, if I could just get rid of that, then that would be such a relief, I would be happy. That's positive and negative. But at some point you come to the understanding that anything that I acquire just by the very nature of the creation, any gain, is subject to loss. There is no such thing as acquiring some stable state, some steady state, in reference to this creation, to any gains or everything in the creation is subject to gains or loss. I come to that realization. So here in this verse, this etta, then, Ashvalayanaha, who is a great teacher, he's respected, and often you'll find him in the, when you're studying the Vedas, Ashvalayanaha is a name that you'll become familiar with if you're reading or studying in the Vedas. So Ashvalayanaha reached that point. He became what we call a mumukshu, one who is desirous of liberation, realizing the limitations of any gains that I might gain within the creation, even the heaven worlds. Even the heaven worlds, it's not like, in Christianity or in the West, people will think, well, You have this birth, it's your only birth, there's no prior karma or anything, just for some reason you were born, that's it, you were born. Then, when you die, you go to heaven or hell. If you go to heaven, that's permanent. If you go to hell, that's also permanent. Catholics, you could go to purgatory and then go to heaven. It's permanent. You know? But in the Vedic world, there is no idea of any permanent state within this creation. If you go to a heaven world, there's seven worlds up and seven worlds down, it's temporary, because what's getting you to that world are karmas. The actions that you've done, and the actions that you've done themselves, are limited. So the limited action is going to give a limited result. So you may go to a heaven world for a period of time, but you still have to come back. So what we find, even every experience that you have, even heaven worlds, hell worlds, of course, are there also, that are a result of papa, or a result of actions that are create harm. That's also temporary. So if you have to go to a hell world, you come back from that too. So, in fact, that's a good thing, right? But the fact is that any experience that you have is time-bound. Any result, the result of any action, anything that you do, is a time-bound result. The action is time-bound, the result is time-bound. And so therefore, I can't get off this wheel of samsara. There's no way to resolve the wheel. That means I'm going to just continually be experiencing the fruits of my actions. And I'm continually going to be the temporary fruits of my actions, and I'm going to be experiencing constant change. And it's that experience of constant change also that makes somebody like the Buddha say, you know, in his Four Noble Truths, life is dukkha. In Sanskrit, the first noble truth is, this is it, dukkha. That's it. It's not anything else, just dukkha, sorrow. Then the second one is dukkha samudaya. There's a cause for that sorrow. The dukkha is that even moments of joy where I feel all is well with me come to an end. And so pregnant, every moment of joy is pregnant with dukkha. Right? Because every moment of joy comes to an end. And the end of that joy is sorrow. And so that life is, they'll say, life is suffering. And the cause for that, there's a number of things, but one of the main causes is the anicca, the non-eternality of every experience that you have. And so if you, that's all right for the sorrowful ones, thank God, but then you're already in dukkha. And so you get a little moment of reprieve, but the moment of reprieve, because it also is temporary, is pregnant with the dukkha, is pregnant with the sorrow. And so here, Ashwalayanaha, he realized this problem. And so he became a mumukshu, one who is desirous of liberation. Desirous of liberation, mumukshutva means one, literally one who desires liberation. A person is a mumukshu, only becomes a mumukshu when they realize that they don't have a solution. You're not a mumukshu if you have a solution. If you think that you can manipulate the world or your experiences in such a way, or that you can actually put together your activities, your actions, the way you are in life, if you can create something, a lasting happiness in the world, then you're not a mumukshu, because in your mind you can still solve this problem. You know? And so life is fine then. I can figure it out and I can become whole and complete. I can fulfill myself as a human being. Fine, you're not a mumukshu, you don't qualify. Who qualifies as a mumukshu and who therefore becomes, for whom the Upanishads are relevant, is the person who realizes that I cannot win this game. It's not possible to win this game. Because, not because of any fault of my own, I could be the most brilliant person in the world. I could have be the most skilled person in the world, but I cannot change, even with all of that skill, with all of that brilliance, I can't change the nature of the world. I can't make what is by nature bound by change, you know, free of change. And the whole universe that we experience, including your body, your mind, your sense organs, even the I thought, everything about this body, mind, sense organs, and everything about the world that we experience is bound by change. And there's nothing you can do about that. You can't decide, I'm going to make that different. You know, you can't change the nature of things. But if that is the nature of the things, the best you can do is continually handle this changing environment. You can't get a steady state. There's no such thing as a steady state. You know, you can't say, now all is well with me. All is well with me for the moment. Now let me handle the changing situation. That's what you can do. And so the first part of the Vedas will help you do that. You know, but you're juggling all of the time. It's a juggling act. So then the question comes, is there anything about me that I don't have to juggle? Is there anything about me that is free, where I can say that is whole, that is complete, that isn't on the verge of collapse, that isn't always on the verge of change, on the verge of loss? Is there anything about me is what we call nitya, timeless, free, complete as I am? Is there any such thing? And if there is, please show it to me, because I know that it's not here in the world that I am able to experience. It doesn't exist. And that's true in terms of the world that I experience. That I experience internally means the mind, your emotions, your emotions, your imaginations, your thoughts are all bound by change. Even the I thought I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing this, I'm thinking that I. That's also coming and going, always hooking on to one thing after another after another. Physical body, of course, is subject to death. So all of your experiences, inner and outer, in terms of anything that I can objectify, right, is subject to change. And so now, once you recognize that, then you throw up your hands to Bhagavan and say, what is this moksha? I've heard this word in India. They'll say, what is this? There is such a thing as moksha. There is such a thing as liberation. There is such a thing as freedom from samsara. You know, please teach me what that is. And the first part of the Vedas will allude to it, right? Because it's one Vedas. The first part will allude to it. The second part will teach it to those people who have become mubukshus. So this ekha means now Ashwalayana has become a mamukshu. That's what the ekha means. Okay. So he says, Bhagavantam, then Bhagavantam, Parimeshtinam, Parisamaitya. Parisamaitya is an inclinable past participle. Means having approached Brahmaji. Brahmaji is, you know, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. So Brahmaji is the god, the devata, who's responsible. It's the aspect of Ishwara who's responsible for the projection of the creation, and is in an embodied form in the Swargaloka, in the highest loka. So here, as the story goes, Ashwalayana approached Brahmaji, in a way the first teacher, not Dakshinamurti, but the first teacher of all of the devata. So he approaches Brahmaji, who is, another word for him is Brahmaji, who is Parameshtinam. In the Bhasha, Parameshtinam means one who is dwelling in the Swargaloka, who has the highest sthanam. He's got the highest sthanam, the highest place in the Swargaloka. The best person to approach. So here Ashwalayana, having approached according to Viddhi. Viddhi means properly approached. Approached with respect and with Shraddha. So with Shraddha, Shraddha means with an attitude of I want to learn these Upanishads. I want to learn this teaching from you. It's both things. This teaching that you know, as he'll say, this teaching that you know is this teaching that I want to learn from you. Both are important. When we talk about Shraddha, Shraddha means that there's a faith pending understanding. That's how Swamiji will say, Shraddha. A faith pending understanding for both the teaching and the teacher. Because say, you want to learn this particular teaching, but, you know, not from you. Yeah, but it can be, right? I want to learn this teaching, but not from you. So your heart can be open to the teaching, but not coming from that particular teacher. So the Shraddha, since this teaching is a living teaching, your heart has to be open to both. I want to gain this knowledge, and I believe that you can teach it to me. And so what that does is it gives the student the shanti or the peace that's necessary to be even receptive to the teaching. So even in some of the shanti patas, the one that we chant all the time, Sahana Bhavatu, it just states it. You know, let there not be any stress or any argument or any bad feelings between the teacher and the student. Because if that tension is there, the teacher will be talking, but to the student it'll just be babble. You won't be taking in anything because there's a negative relationship there, and the negative relationship is what is being held in the forefront. So that Shraddha becomes very important. So they always talk about that the student approaches the teacher and the teaching with that attitude of Shraddha. You know, it's a faith pending understanding, so that's given to both. So when we say this parisamatya, having approached properly, then Ashwalayana says, uvacha means he says. Okay? So then after having become a mumuchu, Ashwalayana, right, having approached properly, Bhagavan, which is Brahmaji, who has that highest sthana in Brahmaloka and Swargaloka, then he says, adihi bhagavo brahmavidyam, adihi bhagavo brahmavidyam varishtam, sada sadbhi sevyamanam, sada sadbhi sevyamanam nigudham. So this is now he is approaching Brahmaji and he says, adihi bhagavaha. Bhagavaha is Bhagavan, it's invocative. Hey Bhagavan, it's respectful to Bhagavan. Hey Bhagavan. Adihi, please teach me. Brahmavidyam, this knowledge of Brahman. Brahman is the self which is infinite. And for a Hindu, if they are within the Vedic culture, they'll know that the Upanishads teach the nature of Brahman. The nature of Brahman is contained in the Mahavakya, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, right? Or Tatvamasi, that thou art, you are that Brahman, the self is Brahman, you know? So what I have to recognize, somebody held within the Vedic culture will know, I need to gain knowledge of Brahman. This is what the Upanishads teach. Brahma Vidya. The Vidya means knowledge. Brahma Vidya means knowledge of Brahman. Knowledge of that self which is infinite. I don't experience myself as infinite. I experience myself as this body, mind, sense organs. I am a jiva. I am an individual who is just transmigrating through a samsari, transmigrating through this world, going to heaven worlds and coming back and, you know, just experiencing the results of my karma. How is it that I could be Brahma? That Brahma Vidya. How could I myself be infinite? Please teach me that knowledge of Brahman. Which is Varishtam? Which Varishtam means which is the greatest, which is the most auspicious. We've heard of Shreyas. In the Katha Upanishad they teach Shreyas. That which is better. Shreyas means that which is better. Varishtam is better than Shreyas, even though in the Shreyas is a comparative. Varishtam is the superlative. Means that which is the most exalted. In the Katha Upanishad, we use Shreyas as that which is absolute good. So we use it as a superlative. But Varishtam is the superlative of Shreyas. So that which is the absolute good, that which is the most exalted, that which is the nothing better than. So, hey Bhagavan, may you teach me that Brahmavidyam, which is Varishtam, which is the most exalted, the most beneficial. There's nothing higher than that, than this to gain. Then he says, Sada Sadbihi Sevyamanam. That which is always being, save can mean to serve, but it also means to be practiced or being tended to or being cultivated. That which is Sada, that which is always being cultivated by the goods, Sadbihi, by those who are good, by the Dharmis. Because in the Vedic culture, even the Karmakanda, right, has moksha, right? And because the Vedas, Karmakanda is the first portion of the Vedas. The Uttarakanda is the second portion of the Vedas. So that knowledge, that Brahmavidya, for the whole Vedas is considered most exalted. And so even the Karmakandis at some point will become sannyasis, right? Seeking this Brahmavidya. So that Brahmavidya, all of the Karmakanda, if a person is living the life of the Karmakanda, you are continually gaining antakarana shuddhi, right? Because you're living a life of dharma. Antakarana shuddhi means purity of mind. So you're becoming a dharmanishta. You're becoming a dharmi, somebody whose life is in harmony with the creation. As your life is more and more in harmony with the creation, the amount of shanti you experience naturally will increase. As opposed to an adharmi. Any type of adharmi is going to create a shanti. It's going to create agitation in the mind. But so as you become somebody who is, who's in the karmakanda, your highest value really becomes one of living in harmony with Ishwara, in harmony with the whole, in harmony with the way things are. That gives antakarana shuddhi. That purity of mind will translate at some point in time into what they consider Ishwara Nugraha, the great grace of God, will translate into that mumukshutvam. And the mumukshutvam will translate, that desire for liberation will itself translate into what we call jignasa, which means a desire to know. And what do we desire to know is the brahmavidya, that which will ultimately set me free. So everyone within the Vedic culture, which is different than in the West, everyone in the Vedic culture knows there is such a thing as moksha, as liberation, as brahmavidya, as knowledge of Brahman. Everyone knows that there's such a thing. And so now, that brahmavidya is the most exalted. You know, and sannyasis in India, though everything's becoming kind of a hodgepodge now, but traditionally, the sannyasi also is held in highest esteem, where maybe now the person who is the richest or most powerful is held in highest esteem. At one point, it's really the sannyasi, the person, the renunciate, the person who has this brahmavidya, is the one who is held in the highest esteem. And everybody knows that. So that brahmavidya is the most exalted. It's something which has always been held in the mind and cultivated by the dharmis, by those people that are good. They may not have taken sannyasa, they may not be considered themselves mumukshus, but that mumukshutvam, that desire for liberation and moksha, always has a special place. So that moksha, that brahmavidya, is always being held in the heart by the dharmis, by the sadbhihi, by those who are good. So now, Ashwalayana is saying, may you teach me, hey Bhagawan, may you teach me that brahmavidya which is most exalted, which has always been cultivated and revered by the good, by the dharmis, and that brahmavidya which is niguda, nigudham. That knowledge which is completely hidden, right? That knowledge which is niguda, it's completely hidden. We say, that niguda, how is it hidden? We say it's placed in the cave, in the guha, in the cave of the buddhi. Mm. Brahma, Brahman, the Atma, that self which is to be known, is there in the guha, in the cave of the buddhi. Cave because, Swamiji does a nice commentary on this in another section. That guha, the cave of the buddhi, it's called a cave here because the cave is dark. You walk into that cave, you can't see anything, right? So that's the ajnanam. So that buddhi, buddhi means the mind, the intellect, right? Your mind. That Brahman is hidden in your mind. It's really the very Brahman is the very self, the very being, the conscious being that is there as the self illumining your mind. But it is niguda. It's totally hidden because that self is as though covered by ignorance, right? And so even though the self, the conscious being which is Brahman, is totally present as the very being which is the self of your mind, that can allow you to say, I am my mind, right? Everybody can say, I am my mind, I am my thoughts, I am my emotions, I am happy, I am sad. That I am, right? There's a conscious being there that's filling the mind. But that conscious being is taken to be one with the mind. So if the mind is sad, I am sad. If the mind is happy, I am happy. If the mind is agitated, I am agitated. If the mind is dull, I am dull, right? And so that amness, that being, right, the nature of that being, which is totally present as the very self of the mind, the sense organs, the body, which is me. And when I say I am, right, if I say I am this body, right, the I am that you're referring to is the conscious being that you are, right? But when you say I am this body, that is the ajnanam. So the I am, the conscious being, is hidden by the ignorance which causes you to superimpose your being on this body, or superimpose your being, the me, on the thoughts of your mind or on your emotions. The ignorance is what allows you to say, I, this conscious being, this me, is this emotion, is this body, and is this mind. That's the ajnanam. And so this Brahmavidya is the most hidden. Nothing can be more hidden because it is your very nature. Right? So you can go looking everywhere. Where can't you? There's in the entire creation. You can look through the mind, you can look through the emotions, you can look, you know, through the body, you can look, you can search the heavens, you can search the whole world, trying to find this Brahma. Brahma Vidya, this knowledge of Brahman, searching Brahman. But where is it? It's the very nature of the one who's searching. It's the nature of the one who's searching. So it is the greatest secret, you know. It's hidden there in the guha of your buddhi. In the guha, we say that the guha is meant to just be, it's hidden there in the buddhi. What is hiding it? It's the ajnanam. And you know what? Ajnanam, ignorance is not like a bag put over your head. Ignorance is not something that literally covers. It doesn't cover like a bag. And your consciousness is not covered. But there's no distance between consciousness and perceptions. There's no distance between consciousness and thoughts, or consciousness and emotions. So it's not an ignorance of covering, like putting a bag over a lamp so the lamp can't be seen. It's the ignorance which causes you not to recognize what is the self that as you actually are. Right? I take myself to be something that I'm experiencing. The self is not hidden or covered. It's just mistaken to be. It's superimposed on something which I'm experiencing. So, for instance, if you have a sorrowful thought, that thought comes, and now there's a sorrowful thought, and then you say, I am sorrowful. That's the problem. Even though you're aware of it, you say, I am that. That's the superimposition. So the self becomes sorrowful, and the sorrowfulness has a self. It's like a red-hot iron ball. That's the whole problem right there. So Brahman is lost in that ignorance. Because actually, that conscious being that you are, that self, is changeless and is infinite. That's what needs to be discovered. But how is it going to be discovered? Because your mind and your sense organs and all of your means of knowledge, they only look out here. They give you knowledge of what's out here, of what's within the creation. Right? They don't give you knowledge of the self-shining being that's illumining all of that. So that's the self, that's the greatest hiding place. So Ashwalayana says, hey Bhagavan, please teach me this Brahmavidya, which is most hidden, which is Nibbuddha, it's so hidden. There's no greater hiding place. Please teach me that which is always revered, you know, by the good people, by those people who are good. Right? Because that's the dharmis. That which is held in highest esteem always by the dharmis, please teach me that which is most pure. And then he says, yaya chirat sarva papam yapohya, yaya chirat sarva papam yapohya, parat param purusham yati vidvan, parat param purusham yati vidvan. So he goes on, he says, that, please teach me that Brahmavidya, yaya, by which, achirat, in not a long time, quickly.
Right away.
Sarva papam, all of the papas, all of the sins, all of the impurities, all of the agitations, you know, all of the papas that I've accrued, yapohya, are negated, are eliminated, are destroyed. So that by which all of these papas, dipohya is indeclinable past participle, Sanskrit students, having destroyed all of these papas in a short period of time, achirat, adverb, achirat, purusham yati vidvan, that knower, that one who knows, yati, goes to the purusha, parat param purusha. That purusha is another name for Brahman, that being, that one who is. Each one of you are a purusha. You're each a person, right? Purusha means a person. So that person, you are a person. You'll never take yourself not to be a person. But the person that you are is Brahman. Really, the person that you are, that allows you to say, I am, I'm a conscious being, this me. You say me. Is that? That is the person. That is the purusha. This body, mind, sense organs are objects of your experience. The purusha is free of that. So it says, param, para, param, that which is, that purusha which is param, which is supreme, which is above and beyond the entire. Parat means the entire manifest creation, the entire avyakta, the whole Ishwar Upadi. That Purusha, which is the self of the whole manifest creation, of the avyakta, of the maya. That's the Parat. First Parat is this avyakta, this creation that comes into manifestation. That one that is beyond even that, the self that is the very self of the entire creation. So, says, that may you teach me that, the knower of whom, by which the Vidvan, the one who knows, right, the Vidvan, one who knows this, that one goes to that Purusha, means through knowledge, there's nowhere to travel here, gains through knowledge that Purusha, that self, right, which is higher than the highest. Higher than the highest means highest here is the object of the Maya Upadi that is responsible for the manifestation of the creation. So the one that is higher than that is the self in which that rests. So that is Brahman. So may you teach me. May you teach me. May you give me knowledge of that self so that I can go to that. Go to that means that I become that. I become what I already am, in fact. I become that through the removal of this niguda, of this hiddenness. So can you remove the ajnanam so that I can go to that purusha in terms of knowledge, that I can be free, that I can recognize myself of that, having been released from all of these papas. Okay, so. Okay, let's stop there. Anyway.
It's beautiful.
Right. Then after he's been approached properly like this, Bhagavan's been approached, Brahmaji's been approached properly, then he starts teaching. Let's just take a minute. Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.